The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.
Welcome back. It's dry January here, according to Johnny Ward, is it?
No, it isn't. It should be, but it isn't.
Yeah. You did it for the last 3 years.
I did, but I had a wedding on the 1st of January, and I actually did go there with the intention. I've gone to weddings and not had a drink, but this one just fell flat in its face. I'm out of the church, and the father of the groom goes, "We're going to a little pub in Screen." And I said, it's not Mrs. O's, it's O'Connell's. It's on the Guinness ad. And he goes, yeah, that's the pub.
Sure,
not going there drinking Diet Coke. That was the end of dry January, but it was a good decision. I've actually been, you know, had a few drinks in moderation this year, so taking it a bit handier.
Johnny, genuinely, have you ever done dry January before fully?
I did it to the 5th of February last year, because I remember Dublin Racing Festival was on, and you know, I'd no inclination to go drinking, and it's well worth doing, actually. And people who kind of moan about people doing it, I think they miss the point. You do see life very differently when you just know you're not drinking, and you have to go out and go to functions, like say the Soccer Writers Award, you go to that, don't drink, and you notice people like who shouldn't be talking over people while they're on the mic, like, and they're just becoming very like loutish because they're drinking, and nobody notices because they're also drinking.
Yeah, it's great.
And when you're there sober, you're thinking, Jesus, this is a parallel universe, like. But anyway, I'm not doing it this year.
Do you believe on the way up in the car to do the podcast today, a friend of mine spoke to me for 15 minutes about the difference in him as a person when he's not drinking, in business, decision making, happiness, all that. Just as you were talking about, the difference. I have never drank as little over the Christmas, and I feel great.
That's Bernard Flynn now, in case
I feel great.
Wondering.
I feel great.
He's back after Christmas. Did you have a good Christmas?
Great. Spent no football, no Twitter, no nothing, and great time with the family, and just chilled out, drank very little. Brilliant.
Speaking of dry January, I was over in London, and you know, I'd had a few drinks for New Year's Eve, and I went back to the apartment we were staying in, and the father says to me, "Would you go down for a pint?" And I said, "Be jizz, I would." So we headed down to a place called the Holly Bush, and we went in, and now my parents are divorced, but like that's only crucial because of what's to come.
Modern Ireland and all that.
Yeah. So we went up to we sat at the counter. It was the only place that there was a bit of room. Sam Smith, you know that singer, did the Bond song. He actually had an area of that pub booked out, so, you know.
What do you drink when you're in London?
I tried the Guinness now, but to be fair,
it's like US.
Yeah, they insult a pint of Guinness the way they sit it down on the counter and from a height pour the Guinness down.
Oh. That's actually not the problem though. It's just that's not really the problem. It's just the Guinness doesn't taste nice.
Yeah, but they show
no matter
this,
how way they pour it,
they show disdain to it as well. But the
they
father,
do,
whose nickname is the Saint, and he had to listen to me over the whole Christmas, just winding him up. I kept saying to him, "Jeez, I'm some yoke, boy." You know, as in, for those not familiar with that sort of terminology, I keep telling him, "I'm a great lad," basically, just to wind him up.
And I'd love all the people in Tipperary and Coola and Tipperary to see the runners you're wearing under the stable right now.
Look, let me
you
finish this first. You can have a pop.
To wear these. Them.
let me bloody finish hell. This. Yeah. So the father's there listening to me saying, "I'm some yoke," by the whole time. And I keep telling him, even tell everyone else, "I'm some yoke." And he's like, "Will you just shut up?" So we sit down at the bar, father and son. And beside us is actually a mother and daughter. Two Germans, you'd think.
You're joking.
This is perfect.
Put two and two together. Yeah. Literally.
He starts talking to him. Now, you know, they're not the May West.
Yeah.
But he's chatting to him.
What do you think of you, though?
Huh? What
do you think? The same.
A few admiring glances.
we're on equal terms here.
But the father starts chatting away to them.
Don't mention the war either. Like, you know.
And he's known as Grey Crack in general. He's known as
the
Hilarious
Saint.
Crack, the Saint. And he's chatting away, and I'm genuinely just want to have a drink, and I'm not that interested in chatting. But he's chatting away, I can hear him roaring laughing. He turns around to me, he sees that I'm not getting involved at all, and he goes to me, "Jez, I'm some yoke, back." Declan, have you had a dry January, Declan?
I have not, no.
No?
I don't think I've ever attempted it.
No?
Bear in mind,
no.
It's only the 10th today. Like, it's not as if, you know, we're 3 weeks in or
anything. Well, there you go. Plenty to get through this week. There's a load of football on. There's a bit of rugby on with the Champions Cup, NFL, racing, GAA, the whole lot. We'll start off actually just a little reference to GAA. Tipperary, and you know, they're not the only county. Tipperary are in the Munster Hurling League final this week. Brian Hogan was up doing an interview for something separate, and he was stopped talking to the media by the Tipperary management. At this time of the year, what do you make of that, Bernard? And also the fact that a GAA manager can tell a player, "You're not speaking to the media." No, he was told he could talk about, let's say, the college competition, but anything to do with Tipperary, he couldn't talk about it.
I know sort of Liam Sheedy. I've met him a few times. I'm actually quite surprised with Liam over the team. He's hit the ground running. He's sort of laid out what they're about, what he wants. their goals, and he's been fairly upfront about it, and I think he's been excellent. But I was surprised at that. I mean, I couldn't. If you asked me, and I didn't, I would say Liam Sheedy would not do something like that. But maybe what was going on for a couple of years there, Michael Ryan, maybe there was too much talk. Maybe he's trying to change the whole mindset. Maybe too many people knew too many things about Tipperary. They were spoken about out in the open there a bit too much. But I'm surprised, particularly from Liam Sheedy. I'm shocked at that.
That's actually three managers in a row at Tipperary who've done something like this. Eamon O'Shea in 2014 stopped players talking there for a while during the league when they lost three games in a row. Michael Ryan, obviously, famously during the Munster campaign last year, said, you know, they spoke before or else after the first game, but he actually said, we're not doing any more talking until after Munster. He ended up reversing that decision because there was such a fallout. And now, I mean, this isn't actually just not talking to the media completely, but this is another kind of version of it. Johnny, what do you make of it?
I think it's absolute rubbish. Like Liam Sheedy to be paid whatever he was for his media work by RTE and then treat the media with this disdain that I think the GA is so paranoid about media, it's absolute nonsense. Like, as if dressing rooms all over the country now, the narrative is whatever's on the wall that somebody said in the media about them. Like, they have to realise that the games are there to be promoted and the players should be allowed to speak. Granted, like, you can have the management, I know they're wary of people speaking to the media, but you're promoting the game at the same time. Mm. And this paranoia, like, what is he going to say about Tipperary hurling in early January that stymies their All-Ireland prospects? They stymied their All-Ireland prospects last year by not playing particularly well. Mm. It's nothing to do with the media.
We might look at the odds for the All-Ireland actually while we're talking about this. But just in a wider sense, in the past couple of years, reporting at different, you know, for different publications and outlets, I've seen situations where players who are normally allowed to do interviews, really experienced media savvy guys, they're actually also told on the day of an event. I remember one for Reynolds Composite Hurleys a couple of years ago. Guys were told on the day, you can't talk. There was one Tip player, one Kilkenny player. And these guys have done loads of interviews. They were told on the day, you can't. And Neil McManus of Antrim spoke in their stead. I've seen charity gigs where guys have been pulled at innocuous times of the year as well. And what I wonder, in a wider sense, is GA players are choosing their careers based on playing intercounty. A lot of them are choosing to be a teacher, and nothing wrong with it. Like, three of my brothers are teachers. And they're choosing what, in some cases, is a lower paid job than what they might have otherwise chosen. Mm. So they're possibly getting hit in the pocket, certainly some of them. And then you see they're stopped being in the media as well, which for some players, if they're comfortable with it, that helps build their profile and that'll earn them a little bit of money somewhere else along the line. So they've been doubly hit in the pocket. Meanwhile, managers are absolutely everywhere after every game. You see match reports now and the manager's name is in the match report because he's the only personality that
anyone knows.
I have
a serious issue with all
of that. So they're making huge money out of it, and I'm not picking on any one manager. But I think it's a huge problem.
It's also an insult.
And treat him like
an adult. You're insulting the players by saying, like, Stephen Kenny made his career in Dundalk by trusting the players to play football, and you trust them with the media as well. You're basically telling your players, I don't trust you, you're going to let something slip. You're a little child, and I'm going to stop you from talking. And it's an absolute disgrace.
From Brendan and Shane's point of view, when you lads see something like that, if that was to happen to a teammate of yours, would that sort of have further effects on in the dressing room? You would think that there'd be a lot of it would lead to further talk around that kind of
thing. I'm not sure if anyone in the dressing room would care about it. I don't think I'd particularly care about it.
But just to touch on exactly what you're speaking about there, and it's been brushed under the carpet. Johnny, you're 100%. But it's even worse than that, and I think it's more serious. And it's so hypocritical. Some of the managers have stopped these players, you know, and we got to be careful, and we're not going to just name names for the sake of it, have actually themselves self-promoted themselves to a level which is beyond belief, endorsed themselves, have went and done appearances, I know for a fact, and being paid. It is so hypocritical. It's actually disgusting. I spent 1.5 hours last Sunday at the Kildare Westmead match, and it was a breath of fresh air with Turlough O'Brien, who was there to watch the game.
Carlo manager.
And I sat beside him and I did ask him about rules and regulations in Carlo. He said, Bernard, I have one rule. He said that there's no rules. Mm. I have one rule, there's no rules.
Now, did that stop them beating Kildare last year?
No, it didn't.
And did Turlough came on the Late Show, late request, after having a few pints the previous year when they won a big game. And he made his way up to Dublin after winning the game with a few pints on him and went on the Sunday game, and it was great TV. Mm. And you have this absolute rubbish from Tipperary. Like, Liam Sheedy should more or less never get a job in RTE again after doing this nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. Galway hurlers last year, Micheál Donoghue more or less let them speak. It's not like you're not allowed to speak every day of the week, but this is absolute bullshit. And the GAA should not be able to get away with this. You can't just shackle players this time of year from speaking. Like,
just briefly on the Tips odds this year, they're joint second favourites at 9-2 alongside Limerick and Cork for the All Ireland. Galway are 3-1. But I just wonder another point. Surely it's good for the promotion of GAA, especially when rugby are so good at promoting themselves and soccer is obviously everywhere all the time. But if the GAA wants to continue to win the hearts and minds, the more interviews out there, the better.
Oh, totally.
So every GAA county is getting funding. Every county is getting funding from the GAA. Surely it should be part of it that you have to make a couple of players available after every match or leading into games. Those players that are
comfortable with it. What's the worst that can happen? Like, seriously. Yeah.
And if everyone is doing it, look at
Tyrone players individually. Mm. From an individual point of view, they have suffered desperately.
Look at Sean Kavanagh since he retired versus before it.
Correct.
Like, there are interesting people out there. And Sean Kavanagh, he's media savvy enough. He's not going to go slating people while he's in the Tyrone squad. Do you know what I mean? But you can at least speak. And Gaelic football in particular is in a really worrying place for many reasons. And the last thing it needs is its players not talking.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Joe Canning did interviews going into the business end of the 2017 season.
Did that stop them winning the All-Ireland?
Larry Corbett, the morning of the 2010 All-Ireland, had a big spread in one of the Sunday papers, wins man of
the year. The question is, where is the GPA who represent these guys when all of this is going on?
Mm.
I mean, honestly.
Probably fundraising in New York.
Or Boston.
Yeah. Lads, let's move on to a bit of the Premier League. Huge last weekend, Liverpool losing to City, and actually then going losing in the cup as well to Wolves, although let's be honest, that's probably a blessing in disguise.
I think Klopp was actually happy looking at him after the game,
after the Wolves game.
I think he was. He was just like, grand, just get it over,
don't have to worry
about
this.
Unfortunately, it's sad, but that's the way the FA Cup is.
Yeah, a couple of big games this weekend. Brighton and Liverpool probably isn't the biggest, but it's crucial to the title. City against Wolves as well, second against ninth. But we'll start off with Spurs against United, third against sixth. Spurs won 3 of their last 4 league games against United, and just in 2018, which straddled the 2 seasons, it was 5-0 on aggregate as well. You've got your Man United back again since Ole Gunnar Solskjaer went there, Bernard.
Yeah, and if anyone listened to Carrick's little statement yesterday?
Salivating over Ole.
He was actually, what he was saying, if you read through it, he was actually telling you what he thought of Mourinho.
Oh, right, okay, go ahead.
That's the way I looked at it.
Yeah, go ahead.
There was 2 pieces to it. I thought it was very, very interesting. And he's the coach, backroom staff.
He was brought in as well, more or less, not by Mourinho, really, was he? Like, it was under Mourinho's
tenure. He was there with him. Like, he had said everything. We've been saying it on the show so many times. I mean, the clips you even see in Sky Now, they're away in Dubai. Did you see them? They're smiling. The players are all smiling. They're having fun. And his big statement was, the scene today, this morning, was the game has to be played in the right way. That's the most honest and, I think, correct statement he said. But there's no rouse, and there won't be if he gets the job. The big thing now is he going to get the job or not.
Isn't he the kind of manager, though, that is... Well, all you've said there is right, but is that all he's capable of? Because this is going to be... I don't want to use a real test because it's disrespectful to the teams they would have played previously, but it'll
they
be the first...
nobody.
Yeah, but they've played somewhat relegation, Potter
teams,
and Bournemouth.
Yeah, they've played
poor
teams.
They will have to now really... he'll have to structure a team. He'll have to have a team set up solidly. He'll have to have patterns and rhythms to their play now, as opposed to go on out there and enjoy the game.
What he will have is, he'll have the impetus and the energy and the enthusiasm and the drive, and I think the loyalty. The players themselves will want to prove, I think, something on the back of Mourinho. There's no question doubt about it.
There's no shortage of quality there. So,
no, there's no shortage.
Spurs are higher in the table.
The scoring.
You know what, though? They're not just higher in the table. You'd say for Spurs, they've probably been at least in the top 2-3 teams over the last couple of years now. They've proven that they should be up. They probably should have won the league at this stage, realistically, that Leicester
year. Can someone just answer me, the soccer gurus, what in the name of God was Harry Kane being brought on the other night when they were, 6 up? Mm. Someone tell me that.
Against Tranmere?
Tranmere.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me was a strange one. Mm. I still can't figure it out.
Are Spurs fancied by Ladbrokes to win this one?
21-20 for Spurs on this one. 13-5 in the draw and 23-10 about United. So Spurs are home favoured, but they're not a terrible price, to be fair. You look at this game earlier in the season and they would have been odds on, I feel.
They probably would have, yeah. They would have been odds on 4 weeks ago anyway. But what Declan says is right. Like, Solskjaer has really done nothing to merit giving him the job. He's just put out teams that are playing quite well against vastly inferior teams. And you look at the quality of Man United players who've now started to play again, Matic and Pogba in particular. But I'd be inclined to think they've a chance here, because Spurs at home, You look at, they lost to Liverpool, they've lost to Wolves, they lost to Man City. They haven't been that solid in a lot of the games in London. And Man United will come in there believing that they can get a result. I don't think playing in playing away from home is going to bother them at all. I think they're going to be very good on the break. I still don't trust them at the back at all, Man United. I don't think the players are there. But there's no way Solskjaer should get the job long term until they've decided that there isn't a better candidate out there, because he's getting harmony in the squad. But I could have done that. Like, it was so septic. Anyone coming in, basically my mother coming in, would have done a better job than Mourinho, just because Mourinho was gone. Do you know what I mean? Like, and that's what they needed. This is a bit. But I thought even against Reading, I thought they looked vulnerable at the back at times. Like, they're not all they look to be at the moment. But at the same time, they're probably every bit as good as Spurs, or not far off them.
The one thing with Spurs is you look back and you forget. I was looking at a list of their results recently. Forget how good some of their results have been. They keep a lot of clean sheets. They've a little bit of what Liverpool have done this season, as opposed to going all out attack. They just grind teams down. They
what happened
1-0.
Against Wolves, though? Like,
yeah, I think they're prone to a blip, actually. I think that's one thing we talked about.
Hit on the break a lot.
Yeah, and we talked at the start of the season. The depth in the squad isn't there, whether it's mental or physical fatigue.
I don't think Lloris
players
is that great either,
no,
in terms of the keepers in the league.
No.
And, you know, that will cost you in games like this, especially against De Gea. I'd give Man United a reasonable chance here.
Would you? I'd be thinking the opposite now. I think you're bang on. There's goals in this because United are going to concede. Spurs are pretty solid at the back consistently, barring a few blips. I think they've kind of had their one for recently. I wouldn't be surprised to see Spurs kick on a bit again. Again, game where double odds on your win. First goal scores, they score inside 20 minutes. So the likes of Harry Kane looks pretty nailed on for something like this. As you said, United so poor at the back, and everything he touches at the moment he's scoring. Spurs an over 2.5 for me, 19 to 10. I think is a pretty solid price on that, actually.
Can United finish in the top four, 6 points off at the moment?
I think it's a huge ask, I have to say. Defensively, I agree with Johnny. Yeah, harmony and all the end of it there. The only thing is, I was just looking back during the week there, and you were listening to Pochettino. He was totally different the other day in his press conference. Is he challenging and calling out the board at Spurs? When he was just talking about how little money he spent in the next 5 years, same thing again, if you don't change, we have to change. Was he, is he the guy to take over United? There must be, I think there may be something going on. He is the front runner.
The price for winning this game is getting the United job.
No, I don't think so. But what I do think is that he was doing something the other day, and he was challenging the board. He was calling out United a little bit. And I think you could see a huge performance in Spurs here, right? You think about it. If they lose against United here in this game, just think about the way the dynamics of this.
They're still in the title race, technically.
But as well as that, if they lose and United beat them, et cetera, right? Pochettino, he wanes a little bit. If they have a big performance beating United, he'll be staying.
Just when you mentioned that top four, United are still 11-4 to get into the top four, which, again, going back 4 weeks, as you said, I would have thought a much, much bigger price. And that's probably down to Arsenal and Chelsea to a degree have fallen off. Arsenal went on that unbeaten run, and people, I think, had assumed that they're back now top four, so United are done. But both of those teams capable of falling off. So
we'll
11-4.
See who buys who over January.
Yeah,
as well.
That's it, yeah.
The other thing, Spurs to win and both teams to score is 5-2. Like, which Pogba in this sort of form, with Rashford looking brilliant. We know Martial has been one of the most productive players all season. Maybe even Sanchez will get a bit more form as well. Lukaku. I don't think that's a bad tip at 5-2. Spurs
good,
to win.
That's a good bet. Excellent.
Spurs have had no draws in the league this season.
It's remarkable. A good thing to do as a team, because you get 3 points for a win and one for a draw, and people don't understand that. Like, the dynamic of the lace, Jimmy Hill, I think, brought in the 3 points, actually. Like, that completely changed. Clubs should be a lot more gung-ho, because statistically, if it's 1-1 with 10 minutes left, you're getting 2-1 odds on an even money shot, effectively, if you look at it that way, on winning the game or losing it. And just, I think, because it's done, people are more conservative. They sit in with 10 minutes to go when they should probably be risking the loss of a point to gain two more. So Spurs, like, are not they're actually up and so high in the table because they haven't drawn that many games. They've won those games, but I'm not sure about them. And I think Man United go into this game huge confidence, really big confidence, 4 wins in a row.
On that, then, if you're thinking more along Johnny's train of thought there, 11-8 for Man United draw no bet looks a good bet on this, because
that's
neither
my
team
bet if I were to
is
have
it,
one.
I don't think, as you pointed out, I don't think either team are likely for a draw on this, so it could go one way or the other, and it could be a really good game. To be fair,
if you did fancy the draw, halftime full time is 24-5, so there's actually, I think that's pretty decent odds.
I'd probably want a little bigger, just on.
Would you?
Certainly on the full time at the moment, 5-2. I think for the both teams to score, and Spurs or even United draw no bet. I could see a draw being out of the question on this one.
We might move on to Brighton and Liverpool then. Brighton are in 13th position. Liverpool obviously first. Only three teams in the top flight, or sorry, in the history of the last 113 years, only three teams have had a better amount of points at this time of the season, and yet they're only 4 points ahead. Like, Liverpool would be nailed on every other season, pretty much.
Yeah,
except for this year.
They would have reached 102 points if they mirrored their first half into their second, which they probably won't now, but not that they were likely anyway. But they are 2-7 here, which I don't think. I think Brighton are beatable enough, but 2-7.
Funny on that, 9-1 about Brighton then, and 17-4 to draw, 2-7. You mentioned Brighton. I was again looking through some of the results previously for Brighton. I went through their sort of home results. They've not been beaten by more than one goal at home all season.
They're very conservative
side. Yeah, and only four times away they've been beaten more than one goal. So that means in this you're looking at a one goal margin for the most part.
Liverpool again, just have a little mental question asked of them now because their run is over, and the pressure is on them a bit now. Like, it's 4 points, and Man City give the impression that they're going to steamroll teams nearly week in, week out.
Can I just say, just the Liverpool boys the other night, I mean, okay, second string they lost. I watched the match. I tell you what came out of it, though. Some of the guys that maybe Klopp or the coaching staff believed were ready to step up, I thought some of them were terrible.
Yeah. I don't know if he believed they were ready to step up. I wonder, is that why they got a run out? I think it's one of those things. You could probably ignore that game for the most play, because I heard a lot of pundits talking about this is not how Liverpool play, but it's a completely different team. No centre backs in the field, or one centre back.
I think injury is going to pick.
Three centre backs injured. Yeah. A bunch of players who he doesn't rate, essentially, with Origi and Sturridge. He's happy to have them there to chuck on late doors, but they're essentially a bunch of players. Mingele back in the team. You know what I mean? There's no comparison to the current team that's out there. So
Van Dijk's the only fit centre back going into this weekend. Lovren's very unlikely. Does that mean the young lad who came in, the 16-year-old, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, does he come in? Last weekend, or in the game against City, I think we found out Henderson and Lovren starting against City.
Fabinho should be okay centre-back, so if needs be.
Like, yeah, he could be okay. Henderson? You know, you've Keita and you've Fabinho didn't start, and he was good when he came
on. Well, the Man City thing, I think he did call that wrong team-wise, but they need to win this game, simple as. If they don't win this game, I wouldn't have any faith in them win the league, because mentally I think they'll probably just have I think they'll be fine, but they need to just get back on the winning trail quickly, and this is a very good opportunity. Brighton are a limited side who don't really trust themselves, I think, as well.
And they've never beaten Liverpool at home in the league, and Houghton in six games as manager against Liverpool has never picked up, I don't think he's ever won it.
They played okay in the corresponding game. I think Liverpool won 1-0, and was it then? There was a great chance for Glenn Murray at the end, I think. It was a very good save by Alisson, who immediately was proven his worth.
Yeah.
But, you know, anyway, they should win, but I wouldn't be having a bet at that, to be honest.
I think it looks a really easy game to read, actually. I think there's a couple of under 2.5 and under 3.5 markets. Liverpool and under 2.5 is 13-5. To me, this looks, as I said, Brighton not conceding too many goals, 1 or 2-0. You'll be safe there. And Liverpool in under 3.5, if you want to go really cautious, is 11-10. So you're still getting an odds against price for that. I'd also, just for one of the big price, I can see it being a tough game. Liverpool probably nicking a goal early on and then just seeing out the game. Halftime correct score, 1-0 at 10-1.
Halftime full-time is 10-11 as well.
That's not a bad Liverpool bet, Dick, I think. Halftime correct score, 1-0, 10-1.
10-1, and that's an interesting bet.
Salah scored twice and assisted twice in his three games against Brighton in the league, so... Is he a decent price for a goal?
Yeah, he's going to be the shortest of them, isn't he? He's over the hand here in a moment. He's currently about 14-5, so short enough.
City against Wolves then. City are unbeaten in their last 34 home Premier League games against promoted sides. So the last defeat was in February 2007 to a Reading side managed by who?
Steve Coppell?
No. Reading 2007. February.
Brian McDermott?
No. You're naming all the greats there.
Yeah.
It was Stuart Pearce.
Oh, Stuart Pearce?
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't have gotten that.
I know, are City title favourites now?
I think Liverpool are still marginal
favourites.
Marginal
but for ye, sorry, I know they are. Right, right.
I still think Liverpool should have enough to get over the line. But I think they should have probably played a different team and tried to go for the win in the Etihad rather than the kind of conservative game plan that he had. I think they'll rue that, because with De Bruyne coming back in now, Man City are just going to start winning games left, right and centre. I'm worried Liverpool will drop a few points.
Have the cup games come at a good time for City to make them look better?
Possibly,
think back to, that's one league win, right? We were talking the opposite way. That would have been, a swing in 10 points had Liverpool have won, or 8 if they'd gotten a draw or whatever it was. And since then, they're still a fair bit behind City because of a run of poor results just before beating Liverpool, which is an excellent result. And then they've gone out and hammered two fairly average teams by, you know, cricket scores.
They were and now
they look, yeah, they were, but I wouldn't say that's every issue fixed. Still, questions at the back.
Absolutely. And on that note, like, I'd go for Wolves to score here because they have a great record against good teams. 11 to 10, both teams score. It's impossible to see Man City not scoring. The worry for Liverpool is De Bruyne hasn't really played. Like, that's and Silva was very poor in the 2-1. So it's kind of, you're looking at if Fernandinho stays fit, you just see them winning week in, week out, really.
Wolves have beaten Spurs and Chelsea in the league and Liverpool in the cup as well, so it's not like they fear big teams.
I tell you, they've been brilliant. I was just listening to Robbie Keane the other night there, and he was just talking, and it was interesting. And he's actually done quite well as a pundit, believe it or not. I know you're looking at me, Shane, you don't really agree.
I'm waiting for you to justify that.
No, I was listening to him talking about, you know, playing at Wolves and they're here to stay and all that. There's been a brilliant job done there by the coach. I mean, there really is. But the style of football
George Mendes as well, not to forget.
Yeah, George Mendes as well. Absolutely.
Who's looking to take over as the agent of Matt Doherty? That's the talk.
And I was just going to say,
Bowes get 10% if he moves anywhere. So, like, if he's a 20 million player, Bowes get 2 million.
But just look at I was just going to bring up the wages. Just saying during the week, he's on 20 grand or something. He's going to double it, 40 grand, 2 million a year for a player like that. That's the salary they can command. But he is going to be doing the deal, isn't that correct?
That's the way it's looking.
But just, I think when they play away from home, I think the style of football they've played has been brilliant. On the break, they've been super away from home. And it's no coincidence. I think they actually could score. I was interested in Guardiola, the team he picked against Burton. I couldn't believe how strong it was. Mm. And to see them, if you watched it closely on the line, they didn't care how many goals. If it was 10, 12, 13, there was something in that. It was bloody rootless. Yeah. It was actually horrible.
I think they're in the whole stretch now, and he's
and
like,
to see, you know, you see Clough's sitting slouched in the chair looking at this.
Body language.
9-0. I just couldn't get my head around. Is he trying to really get confidence going? He went out to do a job on them with the team, and he did it for whatever reason.
He'd throw his cashmere scarf on the ground if things weren't going his way. Oh, it's just,
furious.
Very petulant and annoying.
It's the soccer world. It's the premiership.
It's the geek in him, isn't it? Yeah. It's the oddball geek in him that does that kind of stuff.
So I painted a good picture of Wolves in terms of the good teams they've beaten. But like their last time out in the Premier League, they lost 2-0 at home to Palace, who aren't exactly high flyers. City don't really slip up that often. They've just one goal conceded from a defensive error all year. I think City, both teams to score, like one of you just mentioned there, Wolves to score. So City and both teams to score 7-4.
9-5, I think I've heard.
Oh, is it after the change?
Yeah, 9-5.
What's City to nil?
City to nil.
City and over 3.5 goals when I checked earlier was 13-10 as well, if you think that they're going to beat them handily here.
Touch of odds on at City to nil at 10-11.
Johnny, anything to add to that?
I'd go for both teams to score. The bet you the 9-5 is interesting as well, but Wolves have it in them to cause a shock on the day, so I'll go 11-10 both teams to score.
Did you see that Brahim Diaz signed for Real Madrid from City for 15.5 and there's a 15% sell-on fee, which rises to 40% if Real choose to sell to another Manchester club, i.e. Man United. I love that sort of pettiness. Very fun. Do you see Phil Foden didn't even start against Burton, another one of their young, kind of brilliant players?
He did play 90 minutes a couple of days before that, though, didn't he?
Yeah, I suppose he did, but he's only a young pup. He can play every day, I'd say, at this stage. And like the likes of Jadon Sancho, who's ripping it up with Borussia Dortmund, he probably left because he wasn't getting opportunities. So they're bringing through really promising players and maybe not giving them enough time. Do you notice... bottom club Huddersfield Town, 10 points is the lowest by any Premier League team at this stage since Derby County managed 7 in their first 21 matches 11 years ago. They're going down.
And I think the game of the weekend, if you look at the other end, is Burnley and Fulham, isn't it? I mean, that's a massive. That's probably the biggest. If you're talking about fighting for your life, that's the biggest game of the weekend.
Yeah.
When you talk about
3 points either way is huge.
The relegation odds, 3 teams, as you mentioned there. So you've Huddersfield about 1-16 now to go down. They are going to have to heap in.
They're gone.
Fulham are 8-15. Burnley then 4-5. So you're talking about the odds on teams down the bottom there. You've got Cardiff 4-5, Newcastle 11-4, Southampton 9-2. And then it's about 20s or bigger the rest. So, as you said, big weekend for the relegation battle.
So that's the football. Looking at the rugby then this weekend, you've the Irish teams out. Gloucester against Munster, Leinster and Toulouse. Actually, before that, I just noticed a report coming out for the 2017-18 season, the Professional Rugby Injury Surveillance Project. Some of the key points were concussion accounts for 20% of all match injuries. It's the first season where injuries occurred to the tackler more so than to the player being tackled. The average length of your absence from injury is 37 days, and there's a rise in training ground injuries as well. Would you want your kid playing rugby?
If he'd been at Thomond around Christmas, he wouldn't have. The lads bet the living hell out of each other, yeah. Munster and Leinster. It was thought it was a pretty disgraceful first half of rugby. Doing nothing to sort of wash
over.
Do
you want your
like
edge in the game, or do you want it to be?
You want a better game.
But the question you asked there, Shane, is a great, great question. My young lad played, and it actually helped him. He played a lot. And he was small, and he was slim, skinny, and everything. But it did help him a lot. But I'm talking to a lot of people now. I like it. I have no issue with it personally if I had a young lad now again to play it. But I'm looking at it and listening to it. The problem rugby will have is the fallout of numbers, and with parents, and particularly mothers. And they do make the decision at home. And I've spoke to a number who have pulled kids out of playing. It's a big thing.
Do you think there's enough being done in the rules?
Well, I watched on Sky the whole report, Shane, were touching on there. I watched it all on telly. And I would say it's higher. A lot of them aren't reported as concussion. I've absolutely no question or doubt about that in my mind. 37 days is alarming. They're not doing anything to stop. If you look at the powers to be, rugby's in a good place from
a promotional business
point of view. There's no question about that.
It's a good place in Ireland, you know.
Yeah,
it is huge. But in World Cup year 2019, they're not going to do one thing to jeopardise with anything.
Well, say, rugby's nearly 200 years old. I think the first game was 1823. They didn't design rugby for the monstrously gym-built freaks of today. And when you see the schools rugby is starting now, you'll see how well built they are at sort of 16, 17, 18. So basically, rugby isn't professional long enough to know the repercussions of how dangerous it is to play. I think they haven't a clue. I think a lot of them will be absolutely crippled when they get older.
Oh, yeah.
We've seen the mental health issues with American football players. And I'm not saying that's going to be replicated, because it was a helmet issue in American football, which might not have actually helped, in that you don't get like head-on-head collisions as much maybe in rugby. They haven't a clue what they're doing in terms of, like, the amount of GAA players who have to get hips replaced because of Gaelic football. Can you, and like yourself, can you imagine the contact in rugby? It's like running into a brick wall at 30 miles an hour, and this is day in, day out for the forwards. We'll say they have no idea what they're doing, and I wouldn't let my kids near it if I could. Don't have any, but I'd prefer them to be playing hurling or soccer.
I understand where it's come from, and an element of that. I think they are, to be fair to them, trying to greatly reduce this, particularly with the concussion. The high tackles has been something that's been,
the French Federation have brought in a proposal that you can't tackle above the waist.
Yeah,
that's one thing,
and it's very much gone that way. If you look
the
at
sport, it, sport would be better for it. I think the media. Offloads, and also if they reduced it to 13 or 14 aside, you'd actually have the space that you originally had when players weren't so big and fast and able to come.
I do think the media has a responsibility as well for kind of kicking this through, because there's a lot of sort of, that's very harsh when it comes to a certain red card. Take Cipriani actually against Munster earlier in the year for Gloucester, sent off when it looked a little bit harsh, but at the end of the day, this is how the new rules are going to go. It's going to have to be sort of hammered down that anything like this should be, as you said, frowned upon for these kind of reasons.
You're changing people's lives by doing something. That's the thing. Down the line, this is going to be big. Like a lot, there'll be so many rugby players who'll be in bits, I think, down the line.
It's going to get worse. And this will get a lot worse before it gets better. I don't think they're remotely interested in really changing it.
Just on what I mentioned there, I was down at Thomond for Munster Leinster, and the first half of that was probably underreported how disgraceful it was. I heard Dennis Hickey talking about it, saying it was good to see a bit of bite back in the game. And I thought it was
the only one, by the way.
Thought it was absolutely shambolic, to be honest. There should have been about 3-4 red cards. It was 1 and 3 yellows. Leinster played most of the game down 2 men, which took away from the spectacle. But also the idea that this would be covered and talk about but more Dick, bite in the game is absolutely stupid.
It was.
That's a massive point there. But you look at the Munster Leinster games for the last 4 or 5 years within reason. People were losing interest because there was no physicality. I'm not saying that's correct. But going back to it, everyone was on the back of that match because they were saying the physicality and the rivalry was back. And they promoted it. So, I mean, I'm absolutely convinced they subconsciously promote the game on the hits. You look at the reels on TV at any time, it's the big hits.
Slow-mo.
It's bang, wallow, smash. The head-on collisions in rugby, and I'd say there's not 10% of them actually reported.
I would say there's an element of that with everything, though. American football does the same, and actually Premier League football loves a crunch and tackle from time to time. So
no tackling in Premier League football.
Yeah.
It's non-existent.
I don't think in terms of sensationalising it, but I do think people have a duty after when reporting on the match to come out and condemn this stuff, and people should have been banned for it. James Lowe is the only lad with a suspension for Leinster now. Tadhg Furlong injured a player with a horrendous tackle. You had Fardy for Leinster, who could have also got a number of players just battering each other in that first 40 minutes.
Just looking at the games this weekend then, you mentioned Danny Cipriani, so he'll be at number 10 for Gloucester at home to Munster. Gloucester are bottom of the group at the moment, but they're on 8 points. Exeter are on 8, Cast are on 9, and Munster are top at 12 as well. So this is a pretty crucial game. Yeah. And Munster have made 6 changes actually, and Chris Farrell is back in there as well, which seems to be needed. Yeah. What's our odds are we looking
At the moment? I mean, as you've mentioned, this is going to be a brilliant group actually to watch. It's nearly gone into playoff status for the next week or two. You've got Gloucester 9-5, the tie 25-1, and Munster odds on of 4-9. I don't think there's any doubt Munster have hugely improved this year compared to last year with a couple of players in, although it's about 5 points in the handicap, so Munster minus 5 wouldn't be all that bad. I think, as you said, Cipriani coming back in for Gloucester should make them a fair bit stronger. Huge thing for Munster, it's going to be an obvious thing to say, but it'll be Carberry's performances. They're linked how well they play. Carberry against Castres took a big hit early on, and he bottled it essentially. He wasn't involved the rest of the game. He's come on from that. Seems to be working well with Murray at the moment, and they look a much, much better team.
Very well against Connacht, what I saw.
Yeah.
And interesting you mentioned Murray, because he did an interview during the week and he was talking about the neck injury that kept him out for 5 months and the rumours that went around. And he said the toughest part of this was the outside rumours that my friends and family would hear. Crazy stuff that I'd fail all sorts of drug tests and they were just keeping it under wraps and letting me serve my ban. That kind of hurt a little bit. They were guessing what was wrong and thinking I'm going to have to retire. It's not nice hearing it for yourself, but then your family don't really know either. They're hearing secondhand information. It's quite tough.
Yeah, I remember I heard those rumours as well. Yeah, and you know, immediately you're thinking, well, that may or may not be true, because the rumours are out there, and it must have been very, very tough for him, in fairness.
Mm. Do you see Munster winning this one, Bernard?
I do. I think Munster will win. That Leinster match, actually, I think, okay, it wasn't Munster pretty to watch. Leinster match, Munster. Yeah. I think as a club and as a brand and what they stood for, I think they've got an awful lot from that. I don't think they really cared. I'm being honest, the Munster way, I think they'll beat Gloucester with a little bit of spare, do you?
You've got an interesting market online. The sort of dozen point margin keeps you away from that. Sort of 5 in the handicap is interesting, but it could go either way. A dozen point margin, you can get Munster to win 1-10 at 11-5 or 11-20 at 3-1. So both good options. I'd probably say the former 1-10 Munster are probably a try better off, particularly away.
Mm. Leinster and Toulouse is two of the heavy hitters of European Cup history, 4 titles apiece. It's a sellout in the RDS on Saturday, as you'd expect. Toulouse won 28-27 when they met in October, but Jerome Kano, the All Black, he missed that game through suspension as well, which is pretty big. Johnny Sexton is going to be out, so you'll have Ross Byrne presumably in there as well. And Toulouse are unbeaten in their last 12 matches in all competitions, winning 11. By the way, Devin Toner is also a doubt. So,
and James Lowe, as I mentioned, suspended after his red card. So there's gaps in that team.
Yeah, Leinster at home. Are they still fancied, Leinster?
They are still fancied. Yeah, 2-9 to win the game, 25-1 about the draw, and 7-2 about Toulouse. Now, it isn't the RDS. I'd be surprised seeing Leinster lose in the RDS. But that being said, I think very, very start of the season, we talked about Sexton's comments that this current crop of players need to step up and be like the crop gone, the likes of Nasewa and some big players gone, Carberry, of course. Looking at this current Leinster team, I wonder, is there a sort of false sense of security with Leinster having watched some of their younger lads batter teams in the Pro 14?
Yeah.
When it comes to a big game like this, they need to step up and get involved. But as you said, I mean, there's 11 points in the handicap still here. I'd be a little bit hesitant on that, to be honest. I think if you were going to go with the 11, you take Toulouse plus 11 at 10 to 11.
You're a staunch Leinster man.
I am, yeah. Follow it. And I'm glad to say a guy I know pretty well, Mullingar Shamrock's man, he should be playing Gaelic with us, but he's really done well the last number of weeks. Conor O'Brien, he's a young kid I know well. And I met him, we won the county championship, and he was sort of involved with the lads. He knows a young lad and another little guy, he's involved in the club. And I met him the Monday night after, and I was asking how it was going. He just looked me in the eye and he says, "I'm really close, Bernard." He says, "I'm that close." And the last month, 6 weeks, we're all really proud of him there in Mullingar. He's a great lad. He stuck with it. He's had injury after injury. His father, Gareth, played with Offaly. Gareth, believe it or not, yeah, a Gaelic football. So he's done great, and he hasn't come from the schools or anything like that as such. Great young guy. He got man the match against Ulster. Super.
Brilliant to us. One quick thing to mention just for Ulster, also in a cracking game with Racing. They're looking really good at the moment, Ulster, in terms of their group. This game is very interesting. They're 6-4. To win a 20-1 about the draw, 4-7 for Racing. Ulster have been excellent at home, but Racing for me a better team by about a try, if not more. I think they beat them by far a bit more now over in France. The 3 points in the handicap, I can't believe at the moment there for this. So Ulster plus 3 at evens, the draw 25-1, and then Racing minus 3 at 10-11. I'd have to say Racing are going to cover that handicap, if that's where you're looking. And in all 3 of these games, we're going to double odds on your winning first try score bets if your player goes on to get another try.
We're heading for playoff time in the NFL. It's really, really starting to shape up. It was wildcard weekend last weekend. That wasn't particularly exciting for the teams that kind of squeaked through, but it should be brilliant stuff from here on out. It's the divisional round of the playoffs. There are no more byes. So there are 4 brilliant games this weekend. New Orleans Saints against the Philadelphia Eagles. The Saints are fancied by 8 points there. Rams against Cowboys. Rams are fancied by 7. Chiefs against Colts. And the Pats against Chargers is 3.5 points. But just coming back to Colts, where there's a 5.5 point sort of spread there. Kansas City Chiefs have had a week off. They've got, like, this is probably arguably a big battle for the MVP. And there are a few other players that are going to be in the conversation as well. But the quarterbacks, Patrick Mahomes, is Andrew Luck as well. Like, Mahomes has 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns, which is incredible for a guy who's in his first full season. He just had a couple of games at the end of last season, kind of garbage time games as well. Bernard, you're massively into
I love it. I mean, last weekend wasn't too bad, but I just looking at the list, I actually wrote down the list of quarterbacks, the 8 quarterbacks that are left in it.
Go for it.
Has there ever been a better selection at this stage of American football that's left? Tom Brady, Rivers, Goff, Prescott, Luck, you have Pat Mahomes, you said, Nick Foles and Drew Brees. That's what's left.
Yeah.
It's just astounding.
Going back to the Eagles against the Saints. So Drew Brees and Nick Foles went to the same high school.
I actually seen that.
Which is nuts. Yeah. And like midway through last season, Carson Wentz got injured for the Eagles as their quarterback. Nick Foles came in and everyone was like, oh, Nick Foles, he's not great. Comes in and leads them to their Super Bowl, which is incredible. Same thing has happened again this season. And he somehow pulled it out of fire for them last week as well. Do you think they could go on?
I think they could, but you know,
against the Saints?
Yeah, I think, well, Drew Brees will have a bit to say about it. But do you know why I just think he was very quiet? I think Tom Brady, right, the 2015-17 winners. Let me tell you, I have a sneaky feeling they could actually... Brady, there's one big kick left in Brady, I think. I really do.
I'd hate to see him win it again, actually.
I know. 5, isn't it? 5 he has.
Yeah, he got them rings.
He got all them rings. But what about, if you look at the games, I think, if you watch it, I thought last weekend was actually enjoyable
enough.
I thought it was intriguingly enjoyable.
Did you watch the Texans? I was subjected to that match, unfortunately, so I would disagree with you.
Okay. Well, I tell you, Pat Mahomes, that young kid is actually been incredible. He's just been, and if so, you watch him a few times and something goes wrong, he doesn't give a damn, back up at it again. It was actually brilliant. But I tell you, the quarterbacks, call it now the Super Bowl winner. You?
Sure, I can't.
There you are.
How can you call it? It's that difficult.
Who's actually favourites right now?
Well, we'll look at it here. Saints are 9-4 at the moment. Okay, Kansas 4-1. Then you've got the Rams at 9-2, 6-1 about the Patriots, and tens are bigger.
Yeah, the thing about Mahomes is he's unbelievable weapons. So Tyreek Hill is probably the fastest player in the league. Travis Kelce is probably the best tight end, which in GA terms he plays like centre forward. You know, the target man in there. And they lost Kareem Hunt. So he was their running back, the guy who starts behind the line of scrimmage and just runs the ball. So he got fired because a video came out through TMZ of him kicking a woman he had a bit of a confrontation with her, an altercation, and then she was kind of down her haunches and he hit her a kick. So he got fired. But he's an exceptional talent, and he had run for 824 yards this season, and that was, you know, by a mile. That's still the most any of their players have run this season. But they haven't necessarily kind of lost production with it, because the guys they brought in that position, Damian Williams and Spencer Ware, their yards per carry is actually better than what Hunt's was. But then again, you don't know if the games at the end of the season were as important as the ones at the start. So,
but isn't it brilliant the way the game, just week after week, they don't care what happens. Man, injuries are this, but it's just literally week after week. The Super Bowl, the 3rd of February, I think it is, the final. I think the next couple of weeks is going to be absolutely brilliant. Yeah. If you like the game and understand it and enjoy it.
Andrew Luck then as well, he's got some unbelievable targets. T.Y. Hilton is class, Ebron, Inman. They had a 1-5 start and they're after getting to this day, so it's brilliant. Should be a high-scoring game, but the Coles probably have a better defence. What way would you see it going?
Well, I was just going to give a quick mention to, just as we were talking about the outright market there, there's a nice little market online. You can get some good prices on the forecast. So if you can pick the sort of two finalists, how it's going to go down. You mentioned the Patriots. There's always a bit of inevitability about it. So Patriots to beat the Saints 9-1 is a fair bit of value, but you can find a fair few forecast markets. I know
anyone but the Patriots.
As you mentioned, the Chiefs are 2-5. The Colts are 19-10, and there's a 5.5 spread.
Over 57 points in this game is 10-11. Like the Chiefs have just been getting incredible scores this year, and at home in Arrowhead as well, you give them a good chance of putting up a score. If you fancy the Colts to come inside the handicap, which is 5.5, it's 10-11.
I tell you, they're fanatics, aren't they? The supporters at home, Jesus, they're
quick fire. I'll hit you with it. Saints, Eagles.
Eagles.
What? Mm-hmm. Rams, Cowboys.
Rams.
And the Pats, Chargers.
Pats.
Okay.
There you go. Get that treble on.
That's the
American. What would that give you?
I'll have it a handle. I'll work on an accumulator.
Yeah, let
you
work away on it there. Actually, just before we go on to the racing, there's a bit of racing on this weekend. I just thought, Padraig Harrington has been announced as Ryder Cup captain. And good Lord, the reverence that's given to this is just incredible. Is there a more nonsense role in sport, especially when it's so lucrative that indirectly it's worth, like Philip Reid did a piece 4 years ago on McGinley, that it would be worth between 1.5 to 2 million just being named as captain?
Conservatively, I'd say that's very conservative.
I would too.
Now, it was great to see him. He's going to be different, his interviews, etc. And I tell the media will have a great bit of fun with him. I came home the other evening there, and it was inevitable. But he's worked like Bjorn speaks about him. He spoke about Bjorn. They all do the same.
They're all great lads. They all have lovely bottoms, don't they? Isn't that the way this works?
It's great for him. It's a great honour. He was going to get it at some stage. I'll tell you what, though. He has some job in his hands to go over to America. After the Americans...
Sure, he'll be doing nothing. Like, he'll just tell players who are better than him to go out and hit good shots.
Is there any captain ever that really has actually... I won't say milked his run, but that really has got his name up there. And Paul McGinley, it's made McGinley. Sky, appearances, whatever it may be. So for someone like him, Shane, I'll tell you, it's a huge honour,
like,
and a huge thing.
It's like being a made man in the mafia sense. Like, you're named Ryder Cup captain, you are a made man.
Well, Justin, I'd say to you, is with Padraig Harrington, you can see it in his interview. He's to go to America now, and after shenanigans that went on with the Americans and the egos and everything else, and I thought they were awful. They were beating Docker before they came. They had no real interest behind it all. Their captain was poor, genuinely poor. Got it wrong. Harrington's going to see a big backlash. There's no in between here. He's a failure if he loses, and he's great if he wins. That's the only thing about the Ryder Cup. There's no in between.
Johnny, any thoughts on it?
No, best of luck to Padraig Harrington, but it's a rich man's sport, and it's quite obscene to be paid that money for doing very, very little.
And picking kind of when you want it as well.
No, they're not paying anything for doing the job.
But it works out very well.
Well, Padraig Harrington is probably self-made, likes of McGinley, that's where it actually probably was.
But they don't really do it. Oh, they pick the pairings. It's so crucial, and it adds so much to it. No, it doesn't. Just, you know, get them to draw lots, and it'll be brilliant anyway.
It's overhyped and it's overrated, absolutely.
Anyway, look, let's move on to the racing. Big news is that Sam Crowe is likely to be out for the season with a lung infection.
I don't think he's going to be out for the season.
Declan, you've given me bad information.
No, that's how it's been reported.
Probably missed Cheltenham, which is 6 weeks before the end of the season. He's a lung infection, and that'll take 10 days of treatment, I think. He won't be running at Leopard Sound, but I wouldn't. If you've backed him for Cheltenham, I wouldn't discount it yet. And once Ladbrokes go non-run no bet, I don't think you're non-run no
bet. Not yet, no.
Yeah, so look out for Champion Hurdle Prize non-run no bet on him, because if he rocks up on the day, don't give up yet, because the left someone was very disappointing, but now does appear, and to me it looked like there was something wrong with him. He just stopped. Don't give up on Sam Crowe yet.
You were sort of adamant he should have gone over fences, I think, to start the season.
I thought he should have, yeah.
Regardless of this, where he should have gone, how do you explain the season so far? He's had disappointing anyway, but is it just down to this? Is it just down to lung infection? Or
I'd say he needed to run it down royal. You could forgive him that. I don't think he was suited at all by making the running at Newcastle. He's made the running before, and he was very disappointing. Now, you are forgiving him two defeats. You're getting into the territory of, you know, fool me one, shame on you, and all that. So then at Leopardstown, you're like, well, the bubble looks at worst here. But the way they've spoken about him, and from what he did as a novice hurdler, I'm prepared to forgive him and give him one more chance. I thought they should have gone chasing because he's a chaser, out and out chaser, and I don't. They buy horse go chasing, and I know they hadn't won a champion hurdle, but I thought you're just risking a season with them. I'd love to see him over a fence, and that's what I would have done. But I'm sure they thought long and hard about it. But don't give up on Sam Crow. I think there's a good chance he'll run at Cheltenham, despite their negativity. There's still a good bit of time to Cheltenham.
Would you be thinking champion hurdle?
Yeah,
it's about 16-1, I think, at the moment. So.
Yeah, he's 16s with Ladbrokes. With the proviso that he mightn't run, I just hold fire for the moment.
Yeah,
but it's a market I'm very interested in because it looks winnable. It looks like a race that's there for the taking.
What's the shortest at this stage you'd be thinking of taking someone like that? Because I've had conversations in the Ladbrokes office where people are telling me they wouldn't take 20s about him if they knew he was going at this stage, which I said is absolutely.
Well, that's mad. Yeah. I think he's probably 6-7-1 shot, and that's based on how short he was. He was favourite to beat Boover there, and he was favourite, well back favourite, at Leopardstown. So there's still a lot of confidence in what he's doing at home. And you'd have to say that maybe there were excuses, and he was a brilliant novice last season. And he's 1-1 at Cheltenham. And I don't think Boover there is anyway unbeatable at this stage.
It's a couple of months out from Cheltenham. Is there anything that you kind of hotly fancy at this stage?
I like Battle Over Doyen, but he obviously went in the betting because he won at Nace on Sunday.
Tipped him up for Ladbrokes, if I remember correctly, as well. So
I wasn't blown away by him now because the two favourites, second and third favourite, were shockers. I do like Ballyward. He's going to be a big price for the 4-miler. I don't think he's even priced yet, but keep an eye out for him. I like Angel's Breath, actually, favourite for the Supreme. I think the Irish horses are basically bang average in that, and he went straight into Grade 2, his first ever run under rules, and he was 6-4 favourite, and he won easily. So all the Nicky Henderson novices, he must be the best of them, and he looked good, and he obviously should be improving. So he's probably my best bet at the moment, 5-6-1 for the Supreme. Don't think the Irish horse are any good.
One I think is with Nicky anyway, that Downtown Getaway was supposed to be appearing at some point over the weekend, although I don't think he is. He was bought for about £350,000.
Yeah.
I can't see him entered into anything at Cheltenham. He might be entered into a few, but
I think he's the horse.
Whispers around this because they were talking it up. I mean, I think Coolmore certainly were talking it up for the bumper.
I think if I'm trying to think now, is he the getaway horse at Mags Mullins?
Yeah.
So he ran over hurdles actually. I actually put this horse up as a horse follow. He ran over hurdles on the 19th of December, travelled great and made a terrible mistake about 3 out, came back on the bridle and then was ended up being beaten by Tidal Flow, who looks good horse. He's very, very interesting for the likes of the Ballymore or something. I think that horse has a lot of ability. And as you say, there was so much chat about him. He went off odds on his debut. That was a good race at Newbury. And he's a very, very interesting horse. Just because he didn't win his maiden hurdle, don't give up on him at all. He would have won bar the mistake. And Tidal Flow was coming in battle hardened, and I actually heard Hobbs was very sweetened before the race.
Right.
Pulled 8 lengths clear at third as well. Looks a lovely, travel great throughout the race. I think he'll be a very good horse.
Yeah, definitely one to keep an eye on,
definitely.
Yeah. Last one or two, just to chuck in myself. Thistlecrack, I think I talked to you, Johnny, a while ago about Clan de Zobo and how I was keen on him winning something of value this year.
And he did.
Brilliant. Yeah. He did. Fantastic he was. But I'm starting to lean towards Thistlecrack now in terms of Gold Cup. I think he's in there for the Ryanair as well, possibly to go there. But I still think Thistlecrack has it in him by the looks of a couple of performances. Maybe not back to his best, but looks very, very solid at the moment.
There's an awful lot of positivity from the King George. I like Road to Respect for the Gold Cup. I have to say, I thought in the Savile Chase he was desperately unlucky behind Kenboy, and he was fourth in the race last year. But there are a few factors about that. The ground was unbelievably soft for Cheltenham. He finished fourth. It was his first go at it, and nothing came from off the pace that day. And I think he'll be a lot better this year. But I tell you, I'm so worried about the weather at the moment. I was out in Holt last Sunday. There are people in t-shirts. Like, it's actually so alarming. Like, the 8th of January or something, and it was about 12 degrees. There's been virtually no rain in Dublin. I'm involved in horses that are costing me so much money because they can't get soft ground. And this is in Ireland, and they were bought with the view that they'd have to go on soft ground for. Since one horse got involved in summer, he hasn't had his ground since, and there's actually a chance he'll go through the whole season without having his ground in Ireland. And when you look at the weather last year in terms of the beast from the east, we had a drought in the summer, it's extremely hot with a heat wave, and now we've no rain or any sort of cold weather in winter. Like, where are we going with this? Like,
yeah, is it a bit weird with that in mind then? Is it going to be a bit of a strange Cheltenham, because a lot of them, Lorraine is the textbook example of something that's going to have one run in a listed against one horse that it beat by nearly 50 lengths. It's going to rock up the Cheltenham. Is it going to be a strange Cheltenham off the bat? We're not going to have a whole lot of battle-hardened runners.
Oh, absolutely. I think Willie Mullins' season hasn't gotten going. Willie Mullins has one anti-post favourite in the 28 Cheltenham races.
Wow.
Like, he probably had about 12 this time last year. And a lot of that is to do with, I think, horses that have been either slow to come to hand or haven't run yet because of the ground. And now we're getting into mid-January, so things might actually be improving in terms of ground. Like, it's deeply alarming. I know people will give out, but really racing at the moment needs a week of absolute downpours, like a week of rain to deal with the water levels. And going forward, like, people go on about Brexit, but global warming for me is the thing that everyone should be worried about above anything, because it's getting really, really bad in Ireland alone, and and it'll be the poor people who suffer most, not Irish people. Like.
There's a Cheltenham preview for you. Global warming encompassed into it.
Danny Healy Ray doesn't really agree with you. Yeah. He said, sure, back in the 1200s, we were roasted out of it.
Yeah.
And in the 1400s, we were drowned out of it.
Just two.
These things are cyclical, according to him.
Two prices then on the two we mentioned just for the Gold Cup. They're Road to Respect, the 12s, and Thistle Cracker 12s. And I will also just throw in Mon Lee as well, wherever he ends up.
Yeah, he ran
up.
A blinder.
Big fan of Mon Lee, and I think about 10 is still a big
like
price.
I like the Ryanair fee.
For the Ryanair, I think it looks a great price.
The weekend is tough because the Moscow Flyer on Sunday, Jigginstown have, I think they have 9 of the 13 entries in 2 mile novice hurdle, which is incredible.
Yeah, yeah. 7-4,
I spoke to
Commander Fleet
before the show. Commander Fleet 7-4. I just wouldn't be backing him at that price because I think he wants further. But I spoke to Eddie O'Leary before the show and he said they'll run 3 or 4. So that doesn't really clarify what's going to happen. And unfortunately, it's not a betting race this stage because I don't know what's going to run. But two horses for you. Undressed on Sunday, the horse I'm involved in. He ran a shocker at Limerick, but at least he'll be a price on Sunday. I think he'll bounce back. And if he does, he's a good each-way chance. And Marine won at Dundalk on Friday, trained by Dennis Hogan. I was there the night this horse won before Christmas. I had a terrible night. And I remember I had the favourite for a nice double to kind of basically put me in profit for the night, but Marine 1 bolted up, and the favourite I backed, Chow, bolted up last Friday, and the form looks very good. Marine 1 has gone up £2. It's a 2 mile race, which I think will suit. It's a 25 grand race, so I think they'll be all out to win it, and it'll probably be an each way price, I think.
Right.
That's in the 7 o'clock, don't know.
Well, one thing I wanted to ask you as well, because you'd have at least spent some time at Mouse Mars, and I noticed he's got one Beyond the Law running on the Sunday. Might not be anything major, but just looking through some of his form, he's had a good few pretty close at really big prices recently. And this one wasn't miles, it was beaten by Miles Better Horse in the Grade 1 at Limerick, but it wasn't beaten all that much by Jets, who's also in this contest.
Form is working out.
Yeah, I just wonder with Mouse, he's not got a whole heap of them anymore. But the ones he does tend to have run at big prices, it could be just one of a little bit of interest. Keep an eye on a few of his.
Definitely. Like, he seems to have lost the Jigginstown horses. Bar, I think they're giving him point to pointers. And obviously, Beyond the Law, he was rated like in the mid 130s over hurdles. That run at Limerick was obviously very ambitious, but his run prior to that at Punchdown wasn't too bad. And Mouse is still well able to train. It's just Jigginstown are they're a very ruthless operation. But at the same time, I'd have them any day of the week over a lot of the others.
Yeah, just worth keeping out. Last one then, just to have a look at then, at Warwick. You've got that Ballymore Novices Grade 2 hurdle. Rock point for me. He switched to 3 mile. It seems to have worked well enough. He won a Grade 2 at Cheltenham last time out then. And if the switch to 2 mile 5 this time suits, it should go pretty well for him. I think he's...
Take a bit of getting at Warwick as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 7-1 and should go well enough. You've got a few, the likes of Birchdale, who looks exciting enough, top of the betting there. 13.
That's another Henderson novice, yeah.
Yeah, another that looks relatively open in the field. And
I think that's an interesting one because he might outstay Birchdale. He's a horse who stays really well. I'm not 100% convinced by Birchdale yet, particularly if he gets soft enough at Warwick.
So you're talking about how the lack of rain is a huge downside for racing. For GAA, it's actually been great. It's far easier for managers to prepare their team. This weekend, we'll look at a couple of the pre-season competition finals, and Clare are involved in two of them. They're in the Senior Hurling League, the Munster League final against Tipperary, and they're in the McGrath Cup final against Cork in football as well. I'll just start off with the hurling. Like, Clare knocked Tipperary out of the Munster Hurling Championship and effectively the All-Ireland Championship last year. I mean, this competition doesn't necessarily mean a whole pile, but it's important for players to sort of show what they're about to their manager. And it's nice for confidence, too, to be able to say, well, we won that competition and we won this competition and we're on a bit of a roll. I saw Tipperary in their first match of the year against, which was at the
Limerick
end of 2018. Yeah, against Limerick. And, you know, I kind of had to ask myself afterwards, what have Tip learned from last year? Have they changed much? And, you know, it was probably a bit early, Liam Sheedy first game. What's really going to have changed? Mm. But then, of course, I contrasted with looking at Dublin and Matty Kenny in his second game, which was against Offaly. And I saw all the hallmarks that, you know, would have rang true to me from playing with him for Coola for 5 years as well. And looking at Liam Sheedy, and again, was just the first game, but there's a couple of things that I wasn't blown away by. The use of the ball wasn't great. Michael Breen is still not being played in the backs. He was played midfield and centre forward, taken off after having the sort of game that I don't think a player like him should be having. Their last game against Kerry, Cathal Barrett was on the bench. He's obviously one of Tip's foreign players. There have been issues with him away from the field, but I'd like to think that that's going to change. And I just wonder, is it too early for me to be getting a little bit excited about it? Or should you just see the evidence in front of you and say, well, and as well, even the Brian Hogan thing this week, do you start saying, okay, I'm not absolutely blown away by the start here?
I think it's totally irrelevant. Like, it's
do you?
So, I think it's very, so early, I think it's too early.
But then why am I seeing hallmarks of what Matty Kenny does?
Dublin might have put in a bit more hard work. Like, this is
Tipper training like dogs.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean they're training in terms of hurling. Like, do you know what I mean? And like, we're talking about going to August here. You know, it's like the one worry you'd have this season is Limerick, because Limerick had seemingly a celebration to marvel Guido, to rival Guido's rather, in terms of like Limerick.
No, no, nothing rival that, Johnny.
Well, it wasn't on social media as much, but like, that's my worry. Like, it was a big talk about Galway, which is Galway fairly celebrated in 2017, but I think Limerick actually outdid them.
I showed you how to dance.
Guido outdid the both of them.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry at all about that. I remember watching the hurling last year. I went to the Dublin Offaly game, and Offaly beat Dublin by about 10 points in Croke Park. And Dublin had a great year, really, and Offaly completely faded, and there was just, Dublin were trying an awful lot of players at that stage, and Tip have an awful lot of mental issues, I think, to get through from what happened last year, and why they were so poor last year. They're my idea of the All-Ireland winners this year, if they'll give any interviews to the press. It wouldn't worry me at all.
If
what's
Tip
going on
picked the right players in the right positions, I think they'll win the All-Ireland. So what I'm getting at with all of this is, are they going to start using the ball the way they should to give their forwards the best chance? And are they picking the right players in the right positions, which I've kind of alluded to with Breen and Barrett there? And that's why I have concerns.
Yeah.
Not because I don't think they're better hurlers than everyone else,
but
because they are.
In early January, nothing matters, really. And what's happened on the pitch, in my view, it's just nobody cares. Mm. You've 9 months ahead.
Well, it's something to keep an eye on.
The league is relevant.
I wouldn't be blown away by that at the start.
Yeah.
I mean,
the points you pick. No, but the points you make are absolutely relevant to Tipperary. Mm. But I would say, and just knowing, I don't know him that well, but the bit I know of Liam Sheedy, he'll be organised. I think they'll be focused. I think they'll be fitter. And the one thing with Tip is, you said playing players in the right position, absolutely, but the use of the ball is the big, I said it in the show last year, we said it, you've said it non-stop. People in Tip might give you a stick, but you've been absolutely correct. But I think it's way too early. I went to a match last Sunday, and God help Keenan Hill. If you write the Kildare supporters that were at the game last Sunday against Westmead, fair play to Jack Cooney, his first game, the second game, a couple of games in charge, they played well, they were honest, they worked hard.
Westmead, yeah.
Kildare were appalling. I mean appalling. New management backroom team, a new inside there with Keane O'Neill, and I was right behind him. He was absolutely irate. They were shocking. So you can't...
If he's getting irate, that shows that this match matters to him.
Very, and that's what actually struck me. I went, sat behind. He was like a lunatic. I think the 39 turnovers, the use of the ball was shocking. They were unfit. This guy's heavy, carrying weight. Things you wouldn't associate with the Kildare team. So maybe he has changed his own whole outlook on the way Kildare need to finish the
year
better.
Are you worried about Daniel Flynn now? Or what's
gone.
He's gone.
Like, what's going on there? Like, do you know what I mean? And what chance have they without him this year? Like,
with Daniel Flynn,
he says he's gonna head off and do a bit of travelling later in the year. So, what's the point in being there for?
Well,
without Niall
Flynn was brilliant. Niall Flynn is the best forward they have outside, and he was very good last in limited possession. Daniel Flynn up front gone is going to kill Kildare, and their second. Like, if you look at the Division 3 this year, there's 6 Leinster teams in it. But Kildare last Sunday,
that's
just a point of
it's actually incredible. Albeit in a big province. Like.
It is. Yeah. The point we're just making is, if you read anything, you wouldn't turn up the following week if you've seen Kildare last Sunday. Mm.
Just back to the hurling then as well. Kildare are a very good team at this stage, because they got to a Munster final after knocking out Tipperary, lost that. Should have beaten Galway possibly in an All-Ireland semi-final, had 2 bites at the cherry as well.
Yeah.
So it's not like...
Should have won the first day.
Yeah, and it's not as if Tipper are going to roll up and win this game handy like the olden days, and nor would I suggest that at all. And again, I'm not writing off Tip, obviously, but I'm just saying there's a couple of little things that I'm like, I would have addressed that straight away myself. Now, obviously, I'm not an inter-county manager, but, you know, those are the things that
you
were...
You could be a good one.
Sure, look, you never know, Bernie. Mm. But what's new with Clare? Colin Guilfoyle has scored a couple of goals in their wins over Cork and Waterford as well. Other than that, there's probably not too much change as well. it's very hard to call a game like this. Like, there's probably only tissue prices for it. Actually,
no, markets online there 8-15 about tip, 9-1 to draw, 7-4 Clare.
And it's amazing. Tip are nearly always favourites, and that's just because of the talent they have. Imagine having Callanan, Ford, the McGraths, Bubbles. All
where
these
is he going to play these players? And you know, the high ball, the long ball, non-stop. That was, we've seen it a bit too much. But defensively, he's going to get, the full back line has to be sorted. I think genuinely you have to get a strong defence, and players play in the right position. It's huge. A Tip, if Tip get their attitude together, I mean, outside of Limerick and Galway, I mean, Tip, I mean, a strong Tip.
They have so much ability. Like, they have so many wrongs to right from last.
How bad did they play? Here's one for you, Shane. You're down there. How bad did it? I've questioned the Tip players' attitude themselves. And don't get me wrong. How bad did they want it? They'll tell you, Liam Sheedy has actually given up media work. I thought he was crazy. He wants to go back for a reason. It's not these. It's like when Kevin McStay gave up his media work. It was common.
It's a hell of a job to take, though. You look at lads taking jobs in any football job in the country, bar maybe two or three, is a waste of time, more or less. In the overall scheme of things, the Tip job, that's a good job because you're taking over from a situation that, obviously, with all due respect to the last management team, wasn't quite right. There was something not quite right last year with Tip, and he knows that he can deliver with them. And pound for pound, they're probably the best hurlers in the country. So it's not a bad job.
But he wants
it,
but his statement of leaving, what, to take on the job is a big statement for him. Mm. He wants it bad.
Yeah, but like the hurling last year, Bernd, if you're involved in the hurling last year, I'd be very hard to leave it. Like it must be some buzz to be involved in it. Ugh. Like from the stage of Munster with all the games, and then like it's a long championship in the hurling.
Munster championship was just
the hurling was unbelievable last year.
Mm. Absolutely.
And no, I think the players do want it. Haven't spoken with them, and
but Shane, they have question marks over their attitude. I mean, a manager can do so much. And Michael Ryan, yeah, but when they won the All-Ireland, it was great, but some of the players' attitude, and I'm not, and some is over-exaggerating that, but if you look at the attitude, I would say, of the Limerick players last year, why Limerick players decided to cop on, to have a serious attitude, dedicate themselves, have manners, be dedicated, get fit. Limerick
have
had talent.
They follow strong leadership. They follow and really, really intelligent game plan. And I mentioned Tip against Limerick in the Munster League.
And a massive backroom team of coaches.
They got six or seven points for nothing, just out of brilliant movement for their puck-outs. Puck-out into space, guy collects it straight over the bar. And Tip had to wade through muck every time to try and get a score as well. So
do you see Tip competing to win the All-Ireland this year?
I think they should.
In terms of
no, but I know they should. We know that.
In terms of the Munster.
I'm not sure yet.
In terms of the Munster Championship, because you touched on it there and how red hot it's going to be. 5-2, Tip lead the betting on that.
Tip lead the betting.
11-4 then about Cork and Limerick. 9-2 Clare and 7s for Waterford.
Tip are ahead of Limerick in the betting.
Can you imagine if Tip played a system whereby Seamus Callanan and Jason Ford were standing either side of the 14-yard the square there, and you had John McGrath floating around just using the ball.
Just those three players alone.
And you put good ball in.
Limerick don't have three as good as that.
Is this back to you dreaming, like when you talked about Ireland?
It shouldn't be dreaming. It should be just, you know.
Very interesting to see how they perform tactically and under Liam Sheedy. It's a good one to look at.
It'll be very hard for Limerick to defend the title, firstly because Munster is ridiculously competitive. Yeah. Like, and that's a problem Galway just don't have.
Like a Waterman last year.
Kilkenny don't have and Wexford don't have. Yeah. That's Dublin might be strong this year, but Galway look long odds on to get out of. There's no team that could be competent getting out of Munster. Not one team.
I think Waterford, it'll be interesting to see how they go under Pádraig Fanning. Who knows? They could surprise us all. The McGrath Cup final this weekend, Clare against Cork. The innate Corkness is being brought back. They have a 5-year plan to kick on and get out of the doldrums, really, Bernard. Did you hate the Corkness back when you were playing All-Ireland Finals against them?
I effing hated them.
Yeah.
Absolutely, and I can't say in this podcast how much we actually effing hated them.
Yeah.
And that's genuine. It was hatred beyond hatred. And it worked both ways, but great lads now and all that end of it. When I watched and listened to the announcement, now, this is either going to work, it's going to backfire massively. If you have a brilliant 5-year plan, the only place it matters is within your county. Mm. The launch of it and all that. I was shocked at the overexposure, and they were trying too hard, or were trying to deliver a message that was irrelevant outside of Cork. And I just don't get the press conference. Everyone, I know, great bunch of guys who really care and all that. They could have done that without the big book, the template, all that. That's for within the county. And to the extent only Cork would roll something out like this. And what are they saying?
It actually ties in with one of the quotes, which is to bring back Cork's confidence, which is on the right side of arrogance.
Yeah, but I just don't get it. I get what they were doing. Mm. I get the whole product. I mean, Conor Coonan, the legends of the game, all down there, Canty, the boys. I get all of that, and it's needed. It's too late for me. A county like it, the dual county and football, they're training. Are they grasping, trying to get people to love them and football again? This five-year plan and the way it was wheeled out, I thought it was a disaster.
Mm. I see Aidan Walsh has gone back to the hurlers as well rather than the footballers, so it's just blow after blow for them. And I'm not saying he was kind of shooting lights out either, but there you have it.
But I actually think his career has suffered badly because he hasn't, he didn't know what he was.
Yeah, not settling on one.
Absolutely.
Because actually,
massively
around the time that he was picked as the, in 2014, late 2014, he was picked as the vice captain of the international rules team. And because he was flip-flopping between hurling and football, he ended up actually being on the bench despite being vice-captain, which I thought was really, really strange for a guy who showed so much talent
guy, but
in both codes at the start of his career. Actually, what have you made of the new rules, like the three-hand pass rule? Oh. I saw Declan Bonner said it's actually curtailing goal opportunities about nine different times. Like, a friend of mine plays for Longford, and he was saying last weekend he was the third, he had received the third hand pass, and he had to shoot, even though he knew it was stupid, and take a pot shot, even though he had a guy outside him for a simple little hand pass who would have kicked the ball over the bar handy. It's ridiculous.
On the first match, I went, it was Leash and Mead. I was there last Sunday. I mean, look at the managers. I mean, Rory Gallagher going crazy this week. Declan Bonner again for about the third time. Go through all the managers. Where would you see a game, someone introducing a rule? The three-hand pass rule is ridiculous. It's stupid. It's silly. It's killing it. It happened last umpteen times. Brilliant moves that were shut down and stopped. Three is two. You need four or five. You need four at least.
Imagine your goal against Dublin, never would have happened. One of the iconic goals of all time.
Absolutely. Like,
The GAA, more than any other sport, love a rule change. I love talking about rule change and debating it.
It's insecurity about the actual game.
Well, we talked about the rugby needing a rule change when it comes to players' health.
Allegedly, I'm led to believe that the committee, when they met the people together, and I'm pretty allegedly, got to be use the word, they ran with a torch themselves a little bit. It's 19th of January, I think the meeting is. There's no way will this rule be allowed to go ahead.
No.
It won't be.
Like, it just doesn't make enough sense. I actually don't have a problem with Gaelic football the way it was being played.
Yeah,
it was just,
this is
why do you have strong teams against weak teams?
The problem with Gaelic football is Dublin being better than everyone. There's the football games I went to.
The mismatches.
Changing rules shouldn't affect that. I mean, it's it'd be like doing it in football.
Get rid of the provincial championships. Get rid of provincial championships.
Please. As quickly as possible.
And the early season, them matches are on this weekend. Get rid of them all.
Clare against Cork, Declan.
Yeah, Cork at 8-13, the tie's at 13-2, and Clare 7-4. These are just some tissue prices off the top of the old head, but they should be roughly around that on the Ladbrokes website next couple of days.
Pre-season tough to call. Brian Hurley got a bit of form there for Cork as well.
I think the league is going to be very, very good. The league is going to be very competitive. A lot of new managers, a lot of new players. Connolly, players like that back again. It's going to be good. It's going to be interesting.
We'll do some anti-post markets maybe for that next week then.
Bets of the week, lads. And you're particularly sweet on, Johnny.
As I said, I like Marine 1 running in Dundalk on Friday. In the football, I'm sweet on both teams to score in the Man City Wolves game and to give up a treble. Let me see. Go with Man United draw, no bet, 11 days.
Rock point for me, as I said, 7-1 at Warwick. And also, I think Liverpool win that game against Brighton with under 2.5 goals in the game.
I have three here. It's a tight weekend. I know we're only start of the season. People's pockets are tight. We want to give them something back. American football, I just think a lot of them are tight. Maybe next weekend we make a call. Three I have. Spurs to win, both to score 5-2. Okay.
The bet I teed up, yeah.
Okay. Liverpool under 3.5 is 13-10. Just Brighton at home, they're tight. I think under their manager, he plays defensively. I think that's a good bet. And the last one, Munster against Gloucester, 1-10.1 is 11-5. I think it's a very good bet as well. There's three out of a tough weekend.
Yeah, Liverpool halftime, full time against Brighton is 10-11 if you want to play kind of safe ish. Man City and both teams to score against Wolves is 7. Was that 9-5? Yeah, and you just said it there, Johnny, as well.
Good bet.
The NFL, I think over 57 points between the Chiefs and the Colts is 10-11, which isn't bad. And I'll go with Tip to win the the Munster Hurling League final and get off to a good start. Lads, have we it all said?
I think so.
Yep. Right.
Thanks very much, lads.
Good show.
Get to you next week.
The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.